Welcome to Brown Game Strong.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's so great to have you. I feel like I've been following you for a while on your DNA Fitness channel, and you're doing so much for women, especially in the community.
Trying to. So,
yeah, you're killing it. Like, you're literally...
Thank you.
I feel like in our community, fitness is still something that not enough people are like really privy to, or like really aware of, you know, what myths they inherently believe, or just, you know, how to get to the gym or how to just get your body moving. It's not even about like the gym, is it? So I'm excited to like get into those topics and also to get to know you a bit more, because I know your journey's been quite a roller coaster as well.
A little bit.
Yeah. So I just want to start off with, you have just had a baby.
I have.
How does that feel, being a new dad?
I love it.
Yeah?
I love it. It's a different life. It's a very different life, don't get me wrong. But it's a different kind of love you feel for this human. She's 4 weeks old today. And 4 weeks ago, I didn't even know who this person was. And now she's like central to my life. I'm enjoying fatherhood so far, navigating, shall we say, through it. It's been fun.
Yeah. Sleepless nights?
Yes. To be fair, she sleeps quite well.
Right.
She sleeps in chunks. So she'll sleep for like 3 hours. Then she'll wake up for like a feed, nappy change. Then she'll sleep again for 3 hours. I think the tough bit is just you don't get that continuous sleep anymore, right? It's not like you go to sleep in the night and wake up in the morning. You're constantly waking up throughout the night. Touch wood, so far she's been good.
I really want to know, I always wonder this, because I've heard about how my dad behaved when I was born, and I want to know what it was like the day she was born for you, like as the father, as you know, somebody who was like by your wife's side, who was giving birth, literally going through one of the hardest things she'll ever go through. How did you feel?
Overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Very overwhelmed. I think, so quick backstory, like Rin had a very long labor.
Really? How long?
Almost 2 days. I think it was on a Thursday where I was actually in the gym, and she called me and she was like, I think my water's broken. And I was like, but you know, when someone's waters break, it doesn't mean you have to go to the hospital straight away. You've got a bit of time. So I was like, is this a you need to come home right now kind of a call? Or is this I can finish my workout and then I can come home kind of call? And she was like, no, finish up. I just think that my waters have broken. So I quickly finished. I did finish my workout.
Okay.
As quick as I could, got home. And they had, so we went into the hospital and they were like, you have to stay at home until your contractions start. And that's when labor starts to actually kick in. So that night, her contractions started. And then the following morning, so on Friday morning, we actually went into the hospital. Mm-hmm. We were there the whole of Friday. She was in labor. She didn't actually give birth until Saturday night.
Okay.
So from Thursday morning all the way through till Saturday night, that was the whole journey. And it's crazy, man. It's crazy. But so she gave birth. It didn't go as planned.
Right.
I don't think any births do.
Yeah.
It was quite scary. Quite scary. This is our first kid. We've never been through that.
Mm.
So you feel all of the emotions. Mm. So she was born and it was not the most fun birth story. It was really scary.
Mm.
Basically her positioning was not the greatest.
Right.
So Rin was having a bit of trouble actually pushing her out, and then she was trying for about an hour. It got to the point where the doctor came in and was like, the baby's heart rate has gone way too high, we need to literally get her out right now. So all of these doctors kind of like rushed in, all the midwives rushed in, like the room was filled with people. And that someone had hit like the emergency button in the room, so when that happens, whoever's free on the ward has to come in to kind of help out. So you can imagine it's gone from like 3-4 people in the room to like 15 to 20 in the space of less than a minute. So it's quite overwhelming. You're like, what's going on here? And obviously their main priority is making sure the mum and baby are safe and everything's going good. So they're not wasting time explaining things to you. You're just kind of there like watching it all. She finally gave birth, baby came out, and then we just heard a woman say, I can't confirm the heart rate or something like that. And we were like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And obviously, so we've called our daughter Sophie. So Sophie's like on Rin's belly at this point. She's born. but she's like a purpley blue color. She's not moving. She's not breathing. And then a peds doctor came in and was like, you need to stimulate her. You need to stimulate her. So we're just there like scared. Mm. In all honesty, me personally, I thought she wasn't alive at that point. Mm. And then finally she like coughed up some water. She let out a massive cry and literally everyone in the room just cheered. So you go through every emotion under the sun at that point. So it was a real roller coaster.
Oh my God, I'm going through every emotion under the sun listening to this.
It's quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's quite strange. I'll be honest, at first there was like a fear, not in terms of her, I was like, I don't know this person. It was like a complete, although I'd been speaking to her in the belly, all of that, it's different when they're out in the world. And for a split second, I was like, this is a complete stranger that I've now got to look after for the rest of my life.
Wow, yeah.
And then you start thinking, am I going to be able to do that? Am I going to be a good dad? All the, I'm talking the space of 3 seconds, all of these thoughts are going through your head.
Yeah.
But then you kind of just hold her and it's like best thing ever.
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah, real roller coaster of emotions, I'd say.
Wow, that sounds... Thank you for sharing that, because, I mean, I know there's so much speculation around childbirth and there's a lot of like fear mongering. There is a lot of fear. I mean, it is probably the hardest thing ever. But I don't know. I've never really heard it from the perspective of a dad, especially like somebody kind of roughly my age. So it is very interesting, actually. And I'm super happy for you that all is okay. and hope that your partner's also doing really well now.
They're both doing amazingly. Yeah.
Good. Glad to hear that. Speaking of babies, shall we go to baby Dylan? Because I feel like it's
a long time ago.
I'm sure you don't remember all of it, but we'll try. So should we start with a little bit about your childhood? What it was like growing up for you, where you grew up, and whether you were super in touch with your roots at the time?
So I grew up in a part of East London called Plaistow. It's kind of nearby Stratford. Massive ethnic community over there. Pretty much everyone knew everyone. Mm. It was really quite tight knit. I mean, growing up, I guess we were in touch with our roots. I was really close to my grandma, who would basically teach us everything, tell us a lot of the things. I'll be honest, I didn't know what they meant or what they were for, but she'd just tell us, this is what you do, this is what you do, etc. And you kind of put the pieces together yourself in your own mind of, okay, this is what it means, this is what's going on. Mm. We grew up in, obviously, well, my family are from India. My dad was born in Africa, but his parents were originally from India. Grew up in an Indian household. It was me, my sister, mum, dad, grandma. And when we were very young, my dad's brother, his wife, and their daughter, also my cousin, also lived with us. So there were about 8 of us in this small house. So yeah, a lot of... It's like a very small but cozy house, good family atmosphere. So yeah, growing up we were, if I'm being honest, I feel like as we get older and older, we get a bit more out of touch with our roots, especially living in the UK.
Yeah.
I'm the type of person who questions a lot of things. When I was younger, I probably didn't. I was quite shy, quite reserved. I kind of just didn't question things. As I got older, I started questioning everything. So I think the more I questioned, the more I learned. I kind of put things together myself, like even in terms of like religious beliefs or even traditional things. Like if something made sense to me and I genuinely thought, okay, that's cool, then I believe it. And okay, if it didn't, I would question it and I'd be like, I don't really agree with that so much. So yeah, growing up we were I mean, funnily enough, we went to my parents' house yesterday and we were looking at like all these old photo albums, and there was like we had a trip to India when we were like 7 years old. I'll be honest, it was a horrible trip for me. I didn't want to go back.
Did you hate India?
At that point I did, because it was so different back then.
Yeah.
Should I tell you why I didn't like it? There's one story in my head that has haunted me for my whole life, which is why I never... So I went there when I was 7 years old. And obviously I'd grown up here in the UK, where at that point, obviously it was slightly more advanced.
Mm.
And we went there, I think we were staying, I think it was at my mum's sister's house. And I needed to go to the toilet. And I was a very shy kid, like a very shy kid. So over there, they didn't not everyone, like my mum used to live in a village, they didn't all have like proper toilets. Like there wasn't a toilet seat, for example. It was like a hole in the ground that you have to squat over. And I needed to go to the toilet for a number two. And I was like, I walked into this room and I was like, where's the toilet?
Yeah.
And they were like, it's that over there. So I was like, okay. So I'm squatting over this toilet basically. And it's like, it's a really dark, dingy, it's like quite a small box.
Mm-hmm.
It's made out of concrete. There's no paint or anything. It's just like this concrete box that I'm in, squatting over this hole. And there's like a square cut out on one of the walls, okay, which is a window, and it's got like a piece of cloth just covering it. And on the other side of it is like the outside of the house. So I'm squatting there basically doing a poo. And someone comes from the outside and pulls that piece of cloth to the side and pokes their head in. And we very awkwardly just made eye contact. I'm just staring at this woman. I have no idea who she is. Got my pants down by my ankles. 7-year-old kid. She literally stared at me for a few seconds, put the cloth back, and I was just like, I need to get out of here. And I was just like, I'm not coming back here. I'm done. And I didn't go back. I didn't go back to India until 2019. That was back in 97. Yeah. I didn't go back till 2019. And when I went in 2019, I had a really good time. Mm. It's changed a lot. They have toilets now.
They have toilets. They have toilet seats you can actually sit on.
Yeah, yeah. But I want to go back again. I think when you're that young as well, you don't know any, like, you don't know what your roots are. You don't understand things that well. I think now that I'm older, it's cool to go and see the culture, the way that they live, things like that. The food, there's so much more food there now as well compared to when I last went and when I was a kid. So there's so much I want to see and try as an adult because it's very different to when you're a kid, obviously.
Mm. Don't forget diarrhea pills, trust me.
Yeah.
We have weak stomachs out here. That's so funny. I had a very similar experience. I used to hate the toilets. I used to hate that there were lizards on the wall.
Yes.
I'd be like, this lizard's going to fall on my head while I'm doing a number two. Like, I just, it's such a weird world that, like, we are also, I guess, sheltered away from living here, right?
So yeah, 100%.
Definitely a culture shock. Parts of it have changed and parts of it are still very much the same. Just depends where you go.
Whereabouts, yeah, 100%.
So where in India was home for you? Like, what city?
I don't actually know.
Mm.
I don't know because my dad was from one place. My mum was from another. But every time we'd go, we'd just stay at people's houses.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that I didn't like. I was constantly just moving around and it's like we have to go to this person's house and we have to stay there for a few days and we have to go to this person's house and we have to stay there for a few days. So I never even knew, like, where are we actually from in that sense. I need to ask my actual family. But yeah, we moved, even like when I went in 2019, my parents have a flat out there. I'll be honest, I'm terrible with the geography of India. I don't know where it is. But I don't know if that flat is like where we're from or if it's just like a property that they bought to kind of live in. But they were all villages. It was never like a city that we lived in. It was always from one village to another. Even when we went back in 2019, we were just going to like different villages. And that's what you mean when you say like some of it is still very much how it was 20, 30 years ago. But yeah, to answer your question, I actually don't know. And that's quite bad. I need to go and find out.
Find out and you can tell us later.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's actually a very common experience. Like, even when you do have like a home city, you still don't feel like you belong there. And it's weird because you also don't feel like you belong here. Like, I was walking down the road just outside yesterday and someone made some sort of racist comment to me and I was just like, ugh. Here we go, you know, and it's just classic. Like, you kind of just ignore it. But yeah, it's just part and parcel, right, of just being who we are. Is, yeah, even if you have like a home, you don't really like.
Yeah, I was speaking to Rin about this quite recently, and I said, well, when we go to India, they see us as British people. They don't see us as Indians. And when we're here, they don't see us as British people. They see us as Indians.
Yeah.
Like, well, what are we? Right, we're just kind of stuck in the middle. We're just in limbo here.
Yeah, exactly. You also mentioned, I think, on your social media, you mentioned that you were a slightly chubby kid.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like for you?
Oh, horrible. good and bad.
Mm.
I enjoy food. I still do to this day.
What's your favorite thing to eat?
That's a hard question. I just love food. I love fried chicken.
Fried chicken.
I have a soft spot for fried chicken. I just grew up eating it after school every day. Just go and get chicken and chips. It's a comfort food for me. Burgers. Love a burger. A good burger. I don't know. Food, I just love ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to sit here listing out. I just love food. But yeah, those three are probably my top three. But yeah, being a chubby kid, I think... So I was predominantly raised by my grandma. My parents were working a lot, as a lot of our parents were when we were younger. As immigrants, they just had to work, right? So I was born, and my mum told me this, like 2 weeks after I was born, she basically just handed me over to my grandma, who looked after me. And she was a feeder. as a lot of grandmas are. So she would just constantly give me food, anything I wanted. She was very social. She'd go out a lot. Every day she'd go out on her way home. She'd pick up something for me to eat after school and things. So as a kid, you don't know any better. You're just like, yeah, I'm getting all these cakes and biscuits and treats and whatever it might be. So you're just eating. So you're enjoying it. But at the same time, being overweight as a kid was horrible. Like, I used to bunk pee all the time, which is... funny because of what I do for a living now. I used to bunk pee religiously. If my mum and dad ever see this, yes, I did bunk school. bunked pee pretty much every week. Even when the weeks that I did do pee, I would hate being in the changing room. I would hate taking my clothes off in front of all the other kids. It was not fun. But I don't think it impacted me so much then. It's probably a bit further down the line where it was an issue, but yeah, it wasn't fun being overweight.
So was it largely the fact that you felt a certain way, or did people actually make you feel a certain way as well?
I don't think people made me feel a certain, I think I just felt a certain way.
Okay.
Because the school I went to, a lot of the guys, they were very athletic. I wasn't. So when you see them, and then it was almost like, well, now looking back at it, it was almost like a comparison thing, right? Where I'm seeing all these guys, like, even when I was in secondary school, like as a teenager, you see, like, there were guys with six packs just because they naturally had like really lean physiques. And I'm like looking down at mine and I'm like, what's going on here? So I think it was a comparison thing.
Mm.
And yeah, you just kind of feel like, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not inadequate. But you kind of don't feel good enough yourself, if that makes sense.
So at what point was there a shift in you from bunking PE to deciding, you know what, I'm going to hit the gym, I'm going to get into the weight rack, and like, you know.
So I think it was when I was about 15 years old. That's when I bought my first pair of dumbbells. I'll be honest, I just wanted to look good. I was just like, I want nice arms, I want a nice chest, I want nice shoulders, I don't want to have a belly, I just want to look good.
Was it for the girls?
Little bit, yeah. Yeah, a little bit. yeah, I guess it was. It was just, I don't know what it was for, if I'm being honest. It was just, I feel like for me at that point, it felt like I could get the validation of females. I could get the validation of my peers, everyone around me, if I looked a certain way. So for me, it started purely as an aesthetic thing. I was like, I just want to look good. Mm. And it stayed like that for a while, for a good few years. And then it's only like down the line, it transitioned into something a bit deeper than just how I look. But yeah, 15, bought my first pair of dumbbells, had no idea what I was doing in my sitting room, just lifting these things. I've had pretty much every injury under the sun because I didn't know what I was doing. I've had like shoulder surgery because I was just bad form, lifting too heavy, again, didn't know what I was doing. Hurt my back so many times, I got a dodgy knee still from it. It's part of the game. But this is why I say to people, like, don't just go into these things blindly, because you can really hurt yourself if you don't know what you're doing. And yeah, I've learned from all of my injuries.
We'll touch on, you know, we'll go into your coaching work that you do, but I wanted to kind of go back to your education, because I know you studied financial computing. I did a LinkedIn stalk. What drove you into that, and what did you go on to do after university?
Do you want me to be really honest with you?
Go on.
I didn't want to do financial computing. I hated it. I did it I originally wanted to do psychology. I've always been really intrigued by psychology. I did it for my A-levels and it was my favourite subject at the time. Mm. I messed around in school a lot. It just never stimulated me, school. I did fairly well, don't get me wrong, but I know I could have done better if I actually worked. I just messed around, didn't get the grades for psychology.
Right.
So I had to go through clearing because at that time it was kind of like, you have to go to school, you have to go to uni, you have to then get a degree, graduate, get a job. So I was like, okay, I need to go to uni, but I can't do what I want to do. So I had to go through clearing.
Mm.
And I actually went to Brunel University. My sister went to Brunel University and she did financial computing. So she was in her final year when I was in my first year. So my logic was, I go through clearing, I pick financial computing, I can copy all of my sister's work, get all the help I need.
Oh,
it'll
wow.
be easy. So honestly, I did it because it was one of the courses that I could do with the grades that I did get.
Mm.
And also I knew that my sister had done this course and she'd been doing very well at it. So if I needed help or if I needed someone to just send me over their coursework, I have someone here to help me out. That's the God's honest truth as to why I did it.
So you were always pretty street smart. We'll just say that.
It'll be, yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. I studied computing as well at university.
Did you?
Absolutely.
It's like a foreign language.
Absolutely hated it. I think it's Marmite. Like either you love it or you hate it. Mm. There really isn't an in-between because it is actually pretty hard and pretty involved. Like you need to spend all your time staring at it until the code works or whatever. Yeah, I resonate with a lot of that. And actually, interestingly, I didn't have psychology as an option at school. But now that, you know, I think I've been working for a few years, I've been doing my own sort of studying on the side, just things that interest me. And I realized that actually I would have loved to do psychology because I'm super curious all the time about how the brain works and how people work and how societies work. And I don't know, it fascinates me. And maybe that's one of the reasons why I'm here, you know, interviewing people.
I've always felt in my life anyway, I've always been quite of an outsider in things. So I've always used to just, like I said, I was really reserved when I was a kid. So I would just observe people a lot. I've always been very observant and I'd always think like, what makes that person act in that way? And why is that person behaving like this? And the human mind is insane.
Mm. So you then went on to work after you had a corporate job, is that correct?
Yes, I've had a few.
You've had a few corporate jobs. How did you get into those and how did you feel at the time? Did you know you wanted to kind of get out and do your own thing eventually?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I've always had a slight problem with authority. I don't like people telling me what to do. I never have. Even like in school, I used to hate when the teachers would like tell me what to, I know that's almost their job, right? But I used to hate it. I've always had this kind of thing inside of me where it's just like, I just like being myself, being free, doing what I want to do.
Yeah.
I got into, my first job was actually in finance. I was working in treasury for a housing association on a grad scheme. And literally, I was applying for jobs. I'd graduated from uni and I was like, okay, I need to get a job now. My degree's in financial computing. Let's try and go into that somehow. So I was just applying for jobs. I've always found it difficult to find a job. I'm probably going to show my age here, but I was that person who was walking around Oxford Street with my CVs in my backpack, just handing them out everywhere, trying to get a job. Yeah, as in this is when I was like a teenager,
wow.
Like 16, 17 years old. And I always struggled to kind of get a job, but then I was like, well, we've got no other choice now. We're not studying anymore. We have to get something. So I just applied. Honestly, I applied for like 300 or 400 jobs. And I heard back from like two, of which one was this grad scheme. And everyone had always told me grad schemes are really good. If you get one, you should go for it.
Mm.
I had no idea what it was or anything. I was like, okay, cool. So I went in for like this assessment day where there were like about 10, 15 other candidates. Did really well in the assessment day. Not in a cocky way, but I walked out of there like, I've got this.
Mm.
And then a couple of days later, I got the offer letter. Started working in it. I was there for less than a year. I hated it, man. It was the most boring thing I've done in my life.
Mm.
It was a 9-to-5, but it honestly felt like way longer. Way, way longer. But every day at 4:50 p.m. I'd be packing my bags, just waiting for the clock to hit 5 p.m. so I can walk out of there.
Mm.
Just didn't enjoy it. Left that. Then I got into recruitment. That was another corporate job. That was just, I had a friend who worked in recruitment, and because I wasn't working in finance anymore, I was open to just trying anything.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I've got this job at my place. Do you want to try it out? I was like, cool. I went there, did very good at it. I had a knack for recruitment somehow. And I don't know how much you know about recruitment, but it's very good money.
Mm.
It's a horrible industry, don't get me wrong. It's very cutthroat, very dog-eat-dog, horrible. Kills your soul, but pays you a good amount of money. And I was young at this time. I was like 23 years old. So I was like, yeah, let's just make as much money as we can right now.
Mm.
Did that for a few years. It's only when I got sick then I realized I don't want to really work like this anymore. For me, I don't even like someone telling me you start work at this time and you finish at this time. I just want to live on my terms, essentially. So I think that's when I realized I just want to work for myself now. I don't really want to be underneath anyone else in that sense.
Mm-hmm. And before I go into the next topic, did you have all of these tattoos when you were working your corporate job?
Most of them, yeah.
Really? And did anyone say anything ever?
I used to wear a suit.
Okay, fine. You'd
cover them. They were covered up.
Yeah.
But not really, no. I think the one in finance, I was constantly in a suit anyway.
Mm.
I guess they were a bit shocked because that job, I worked with a lot of older people. Mm. I was 21 years old. I was the youngest person in that company. Everyone else, the average age was probably like 40 years old in that company.
Mm.
So they were like double my age, and tattoos weren't like that common back then either. So I think like when we had like dress downs or Christmas parties and stuff, then they were a bit like, oh, wow, I didn't know you had all those. I think in recruitment, everyone, it's a lot more laid back. It's a much younger group of people that work there, so it was a lot of people had tattoos and stuff anyway.
Mm.
But yeah, no, I was always in a suit, so it was always covered up anyway.
Because I work a corporate job as well, and I did a grad scheme there, and basically I'm still there. And when I joined, everybody said to me, you know, you need to make sure that your hair's not a weird color, your nails aren't a weird color, you can't have any visible tattoos and stuff. I think that's changed a lot, and also Gen Z, like, I don't think they give a shit anymore. No. So.
But it was like that. It was like that. Even like when I was getting mines, my mom or my sister or someone would be like, but what about a job? How are you going to get a job if you've got all these tattoos and stuff? And I just feel like the world's changed now.
Yeah, anyway. Massively. Yeah. You touched on your diagnosis, and I want to move on to that. So you had a blood cancer diagnosis, is that correct, when you were 25? Can you tell me about the exact moment when you found out?
Yeah, it was my 25th birthday.
Wow.
So my birthday's in March. 2 weeks before it, I went to my GP because I had a lump in my armpit, actually.
Okay.
So I had a type of blood cancer called Hodgkin's lymphoma, which at the time I hadn't heard of. And I had this really irritating lump in my armpit, which was bothering me. So I went to get it checked out. Mm-hmm. And so the doctor took a look at it, and then she started like poking me around my neck. And I did have other bumps on my neck, but I didn't think they were a cancer. I was hitting the gym. I just thought they were like my muscles growing in a certain way. I don't know what it was, because they were really like firm.
Right.
And the second she like poked around my neck, she didn't say anything. And she just like printed out this piece of paper. And on the top of it, it just said cancer referral form. And that is the first time I saw the word cancer with anything to do with me or myself. And I was kind of like, whoa. But that didn't mean I had it. She wanted me to go see a specialist, basically, to see if it was. 2 weeks later, it was my 25th birthday. And that's when I went to see the hematologist. And it wasn't an official diagnosis, but she was basically like, I am 99.9% sure you have this. We just need to do some tests. And then 2 weeks after that is when the results came back. Mm-hmm. And it was like, yeah, this is what you've got. So yeah, it was around my 25th birthday. So it was not the most fun way to celebrate, but yeah, crazy.
Mm.
Crazy time.
Do you remember how you felt?
Scared. Yeah, scared. I think they show it in films. The moment like someone gets a diagnosis and like the whole room just goes silent. The moment they say the word cancer, everything else kind of just is a blur. Mm-hmm. After that, and it's exactly like that. The moment they said it to me, I don't remember anything they said afterwards. because you've just got a million thoughts running through your mind at that point. And I think the predominant thought was, am I going to die? You know, because anytime you hear that word, you associate it with death almost. And I was young, I didn't know much about it. I feel like there's a lot more out there now in terms of information, whereas back then there wasn't.
Mm.
So I heard the word and I was just like, shit. But at the same time, I'm the type of person, I do put on a brave face a lot. So I remember my sister was like texting me like, are you all right? Are you scared? And I'm like, no, I'm fine. Whereas really inside, I was like, shit, how long am I going to live for? Because I had stage 4 as well, which is when that's the last stage, and that's when it spread to your organs. So I had 3 tumors in my neck. I had 1 in my armpit and 1 had gone into my lung.
Okay.
And it was pushing against my heart, which was causing me to get like chest pains.
Mm.
So because it had gone into my lung, that's counted as stage 4. And because it's that stage as well, you think, wow, this has gone quite far. Like, am I going to get through? But I'll be honest, that lasted for about 2 or 3 days. And then I was just like, get your head on.
You're going to fight.
Yeah. And I was just like, there's nothing else you can do, right? The thought I always had was, it's an illness, you take your medicine, you get better. Just like if you have a cold or you have a cough or anything else, you take your medicine, you ride it out and you get better. And that's kind of the mindset I went into it with. I was like, I have my treatment. Yes, it's going to be shit. It's going to be horrible. But I know ultimately I'll be okay at the end of this.
Mm.
But yeah, for the first few days, it was just fear. It was just like, shit, how long do I have?
Mm-mm. What was the treatment process like?
So I had chemotherapy. They said chemotherapy first and then radiotherapy if needed down the line. So I had chemotherapy only. I didn't need the radio. I had it for 6 months, every 2 weeks. So 12 lots of chemotherapy. It's horrible. Chemotherapy is honestly the most horrible thing in the world that I've experienced anyway. It basically just kills you because it kills everything inside of you, right? The aim of it is to kill the cancer, but it also kills the good stuff, the good cells inside of you too. So, yeah, and it's progressive. So it builds up in your system. So the first week is not so bad. The second week, you feel it a bit more. The third week, a bit more, and so on and so on. So every time you have more and more of it pumped into you, it stays in your system. So by the time you get to the end of it, yeah, you feel like shit. Yeah, it basically just kills you. It strips you away of your identity, I'd say.
Mm.
You lose your hair. You lose everything. You lose your life for that period of time. Can't work. Can't really go out and do things. Your immune function is very low, so you have to be super careful who you interact with and things like that. Like even in my own house, I had to have like separate towels to everyone and things like that. So yeah, it kind of just takes your life away for a bit of time. And in terms of the identity, just you lose your hair, you look in the mirror and you don't recognize yourself.
Mm.
And it's a really strange feeling. Mm. Really strange feeling. But yeah, chemo's not fun at all.
Do you think that your mindset was very important during this process?
Definitely.
Did you have a strong mindset?
I'd like to think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it plays a huge role in it. And I think whatever's meant to be is going to be. Also, I'm a big believer in that. Like, but how you respond to things can also make a huge difference. And I feel like some people, it's very easy at that point to just kind of give up and accept, okay, I'm going to die. This is it. Cool. Whereas I was kind of like, no, I don't want this to get the better of me. And I honestly feel like it was my mindset that got me through it. I look back at it now and I'm like, I don't know how I did that. I feel like if I had to go through that now, I don't know how mentally strong I'd be. But I think it's fight or flight, I guess. And when it's your life at the end of the day and it's like, okay, well, you have to do this or you die, you have no choice but to kind of fight. Right?
Mm.
So I think staying headstrong was very, very important. I think having a good support circle helps with that. I had an amazing support circle. I had my family. I had a good group of friends. Never had a chemotherapy session on my own. Someone always came with me.
Mm.
Little things like that, I think, help. But yeah, I think mentally it's a huge, as physical as it is on your body, I think the whole journey of cancer is even more so a mental thing. And it was a crazy time. But yeah, mindset's a huge thing. And I say this to everyone now, whenever someone tells me they're going through something similar or they have a loved one, it's you have to be there for that person mentally. Make mm-hmm. sure that you're constantly positive around them. Make sure that they're not feeling like they're losing this battle. Even if they are and you feel like they are, mm-hmm. you need to constantly drill it into their head that you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know where it came from. But if I didn't have the mental resilience, I don't think it wouldn't have gone as well as it did.
I think what struck me about that is, you know, when people go through these really difficult moments in life and everyone's like, you're so brave. And it's like, yeah, but anybody would have done that in a sense, like fight or flight. You are literally your absolute primal state of a human being just trying to survive, because that's our instinct, survival, right?
Oh, exactly.
And having the right tribe around you, you pulled through. And I'm really glad that you did and you're able to sit here and tell us this. I'm sure that will help a lot of people. I hope, you know, it doesn't come to it, but if it does, then this will help, hopefully.
Oh, 100%.
So that, I can sense that it caused a shift in the way that you were looking at life at that time. Did it cause a change in, you know, the choices you were making at that point? Tell me about how it changed you.
Yeah, hugely. And it's really weird, and I always say this to people, but it's going to sound so strange, but I'm so grateful I got cancer at that point in my life. And it sounds weird because I wouldn't ever wish it on anybody, but it really shaped the life that I have today. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be living this life that I have now. And I think back then I was unhappy with a lot of things in my life. I was in a relationship that I was unhappy in. I was in a job that I was unhappy in. I was working my ass off. All I cared about was money at that point in my life and just earning as much as I could. And as a result of that, I neglected relationships, friendships, family, everything. I never really saw my friends or family. All I did was work, basically.
Mm.
And ultimately, I was living a life that was making me very unhappy.
Yeah.
But was paying me well. And I think what shifted for me at that point was, I don't want to live a life anymore that I don't enjoy. It sounds cliche, but you realize life is very short. It can be taken away from you at any moment when you least expect it. So I was like, I'm not going to sit behind a desk anymore for the rest of it. I want to do something that I actually enjoy. I want to be able to have time for the things that I want to do. And that's kind of, I was just done. I was done with working in a corporate job at that point, so to speak. And even in terms of like my personal life, it just gave me, it definitely brought me closer to my family. I think, so me and my sister, I always say this, my sister used to hate me when I was a kid. she was embarrassed of me in her own words. like if she had to go out somewhere and my mom would be like, take him with you. She'd be like, no, he's embarrassing. she just proper hated me. We never got on as kids. And I think after I got sick, she helped me so much in that sense. Like she would go to like Whole Foods and get me all these organic things. I was on a very different diet through my chemo because your digestive system doesn't work that well. She would go and get me all of these things. She'd do a bunch of research. She was there for me like 100%. Even the rest of my family, I'd grown quite distant from them. It's just the way I was. I was very reserved at home. I'd just come home, headphones in, listening to music, won't talk to anyone, just doing what I'm doing. And then after getting sick, I think, yeah, we're just a lot closer in that sense. And it brought us all together, funnily enough. So yeah, it changed my life a lot. And especially, like I said, the person that I am sitting here today was not the same person I was before I got sick. I look back at that, but I don't even recognize that person anymore. And I'm not even a huge fan of that person. I wasn't how I am now in a weird way.
In terms of your career, is that the point where you made a shift as well? Because you said everything changed right at that moment.
Yeah.
So what was it that triggered you at that point to be like, I'm going to make a shift and work for myself? And tell me about how that started.
I had no idea what I wanted to do. So the company I worked for, they were really good to me throughout my treatment. So my manager at the time, she was also a cancer survivor.
Okay.
So she knew firsthand like what it's like. So she was really cool about everything. And no company has to do this, but they gave me my full pay while I was having treatment, even though I wasn't working. It was a commission-based job. They gave me 100% of my commission, even though someone else was managing all of my clients and my portfolio for me. They were really good to me, really supportive, never rushed me back into work. Take your time, ease yourself back in. Even when I went back in, I gained a lot of weight during my treatment because of all like the medication and stuff. So none of my suits used to fit me. And I was like, do I have to come in and wear a suit? I didn't feel comfortable, if I'm being honest. I just felt like I was overweight and just horrible. You don't feel good at that point. You still haven't got your hair back, all of that. They were like, just wear whatever you want. Just come in, get back into the swing. So they were really good to me. So I felt like I owed them. So I said, look, I'm going to go back and I'm going to earn them as much money as I can in however long I'm here. I gave myself 6 months. I said, let me see what I can do in 6 months. So in 6 months, I made them a shit ton of money.
Okay.
And I was like, I felt like I'd repaid my debt, so to speak. I was like, okay, so now I need to get out of here. What's my exit strategy? I didn't have one. Sometimes I can be quite impulsive. When I have a thought or an idea or a feeling, I just run with it, and there's no one on this planet that will ever be able to stop me. And I remember me and my best friend, he used to work with me at the time, and we went away on a bank holiday weekend to Berlin. Just the two of us were like, let's just get away, have a weekend, just have a bit of a laugh. And it was just out in Berlin, I felt so free and I was just having such a good time. And I just said to him, when we go back, I'm handing in my notice and I'm out of there. And because it was a bank holiday, we flew back on the Monday. Tuesday morning, I went in, just handed in my notice, and yeah, haven't looked back since.
DNA Fitness, was that always marinating in your head when you handed in your notice at work?
No. I didn't really have a plan. As in, I'd signed up to do... So I started off as a personal trainer, and I signed up to do my personal training qualifications long before Berlin. It was something... So I guess it was in the back of my... Not DNA Fitness, but I just knew I wanted to be in that world, and I thought, a good way to get your foot in the door is through personal training. You get into a gym, you start interacting, you network, you learn. But because of the job, I could never do the course and get my qualifications. So I left. I didn't have another job. I didn't have anything planned. And they were like, what are you going to do if you leave? And I was like, I guess I'll just do my studying and I'll get my qualifications then. I said, I want to take some time off as well. And then I'll probably do that. I didn't have a plan, so to speak. I didn't know that there was no DNA Fitness in my head at the time. It was just, okay, let's take some time off. Let's get your qualifications and let's see if you want to become a personal trainer at that point. And that's what I did. I just left, worked my notice period, left, took a bit of a break, did my qualifications, got all of that. And even then, there was still no DNA Fitness. I then went off to Thailand and I was just training out there for a little while, living out there. Just living life a bit, I guess, after all the cancer stuff. Then I came back and then DNA Fitness kind of started from there.
Why women? Why do you work with women predominantly?
I love that question. I get asked it a lot because...
Yeah, I know you do.
Because people think, well, you're a guy. Why do you only work with women?
Mm.
And there's a few different reasons for it. I never used to just purely work with women. I did used to work with men and women. But what I found over the years was, first off, my client base predominantly was always female.
Right.
And working with so many different women, you learn so much about them. And I always found it more interesting. It was more of a, I see everything like a puzzle. And I'll be honest, men are very simple in the sense... Hormonally, we're very different to women. Like, women have monthly cycles and things like that. So their hormones are constantly changing day upon day, week upon week. men, we're very straightforward. Our hormone levels pretty much stay the same unless we have like some sort of a stress or super sleep deprived or something. It's usually an external factor for men that causes these fluctuations, whereas for women it's more internal. It's just happening whether they like it or not. And it was more of a challenge for me in that sense to be like, okay, I have to learn about all of this. And on top of that, every woman is so different. So just because you learn all of that, then you still have to kind of work differently with every single woman. So there was that element to it, which was the challenge side of it that I liked. The other thing was just the more and more I worked with women, I started learning about how difficult things are for them.
Right.
Like I started learning more about the struggles that women have. And there's always this constant, I mean, I don't really like it personally, but there's always like men versus women, especially in today's world. And I just think, look, everyone has their own shit going on. But there was, I was coming across more and more and more women who, number one, were sacrificing their own lives for the people around them.
Yeah.
And this even stemmed from my own family. Like my mum, my grandma, like all the women in my life put themselves on hold to support and grow their families. And I didn't like that so much because now I see my mum and she's got like a few health problems and little things going wrong for her and stuff. And I'm like, if you were able to look after yourself better when you were younger, we could have avoided a lot of these things now. So I was like, I want to be able to do that for women. I don't want women to put themselves second anymore. The whole concept, like when you're on a plane, right? You have to put your oxygen mask on first before helping everyone else. And I feel like, especially in our society, that's not even a thing. It's like you do what's best for everyone else. And then if you have some time or you have some energy or you have a little bit of capacity left for yourself, then fine. If not, doesn't matter. And I wanted to show women that it's why it's important to put, especially after my own health issues. And it's the same for everyone, not just women. Everyone should be putting their health first. But I found it was more so women that were putting it on the back burner. And I wanted to stop that. And I guess the third part was just, there's so much rubbish out there. I feel like, again, working with so many women, the common issues that we see, confidence. When women gain a little bit of weight, you see their confidence plummet. And especially now with social media and the internet and all of these things, it happens even at such a young age for a lot of these girls. And I thought, there's no reason why you have to feel like that, right? And you can be this amazing person. And it goes much more than just how you look, much deeper than how you look. And similar to me, what started off as an aesthetic thing is always much deeper. And the more and more I spoke to these women and I started uncovering really what was going on with them and how it was actually impacting them and impacting their lives, I was just like, these are a vulnerable group of people. And there are so many predators out there in the form of like all these fad diets and a lot of misinformation and stuff. So I was like, I just want to be that one person who can give them good, honest information and really help them for the long term. So yeah, I guess when you put all of that together, it's why I love working with women. I find it so much more fulfilling than when I was working with guys.
Okay, interesting. So you kind of almost like did work with men before and then made the choice to pivot. Everything you said is so, like, it resonates completely because I'll tell you about me. So I'm actually going through a coaching journey myself. I'm 8 weeks in, and it is one of the most interesting and one of the hardest things I've done. I've literally, I thought that the exercise part would be the hardest bit, but actually it's the food. I've had the worst relationship with food over the last few years, particularly during COVID. And I realized that working with a coach who understands my, like understands the fact that my hormonal, sort of my menstrual cycle impacts my energy levels, something I've learned in the last couple of years myself, I think that was so important for me because I literally, when I'm on my period, she'll just be like, don't train. Like, it's fine. Just let me know how you're feeling. How's your mood today? You know, do you feel like you can train? So it's actually very, very complex and amazing when somebody gets you. Yeah, definitely one of the most fulfilling things I've done. But also, like, it is fascinating that as particularly I can speak for Indian women, I am an Indian woman myself, we tend to take for granted, I think, the fact that once we're a certain age and once we hit perimenopause or once we hit menopause, you know, our bones are going to get weaker, our joints are going to get more fragile, we are more prone to injury, we're probably going to have knee problems, or like both my grandmas had knee problems.
Yeah.
You know, you just almost take it for granted and you think there's no way you can avoid this.
Mm.
And then I look around me and I'm like, none of the aunties in my community have like a regular workout routine.
Yeah.
You know, they might eat well, they might like try and eat healthy, but like their form of exercise is like a light walk after a meal, which is important as well. But it's like, it's not getting your heart rate up. You're not doing your resistance training.
Yeah.
So all of these things, I think that education doesn't really exist that much on a wide scale, right? Like I think our age, people are starting to learn about it. I'm only just learning about it at 29 years old. So I wanted to ask you, what has your experience been like working with different women, and what are some of the things that you found to be in common in terms of like the misconceptions that people have walked in with that you have helped them shatter?
No, fair. Well, first off, I'm so happy you're on your own, own journey, and it sounds like you have a good coach there. You'll be surprised. I love that you are able to just listen to your body at the times you have to, because that is so, so important. And yeah, knowing, I guess for everyone it's different. For you, you said like your biggest struggle was with food. You do get some people where food isn't the struggle, but their struggle might be with the actual training side of things. Or for a lot of people, it's actually a mindset issue.
Nothing.
For the vast majority that I come across, it's a mindset thing.
Mm.
More so that, I mean, training and nutrition are surface level, but it's usually what's underneath that.
Mm.
But no, I'm glad your journey is going well. It sounds like you've got a good coach there, and it's good that you're learning. That's the big thing. It's like with us, we're massive on education. So I'm glad you're learning.
Mm.
I guess, look, we've worked with so many different women, ages, lifestyles, jobs, family lives, everything. And there are a lot of things that we do find in common, regardless of everything else. I guess one of them is, like we kind of just spoke about, there is a huge lack of knowledge, a huge lack of knowledge when it comes to it. Like people know like roughly what they need to be doing. But again, because everyone's so different, people don't really know for themselves what actually works. And they might hear, okay, my friend did this and it worked really well for her, so I tried that but it didn't, etc. And I just feel like if we can educate every single woman in terms of for them specifically, that's a huge thing. So there is a huge lack of knowledge. Our core pillars on the THR, so our flagship program is called the Total Health Revolution, the THR, and our three core pillars are confidence, energy, and happiness.
Okay.
Because those are the three big things we find women lack when they get to a certain part of their life in that sense, or when they do gain a lot of weight, or, you know, like when everyone was in lockdowns and stuff, people did end up gaining some weight, and not just gaining the weight, but how it affected them mentally.
Yeah.
And as a result of it all, their confidence gets shattered. Their energy levels are super, super low. Like they're just dragging themselves through each single day. And ultimately, they're not happy. They're not happy with where they are, who they are, all of that. I spoke to a lovely lady 2 days ago. She actually joined the THR. And hers all stemmed from lockdown.
Right, okay.
For the past 4 years, she ended up gaining some weight, knocked her confidence hugely to the point where she's not even going out at the moment.
Okay.
She keeps herself trapped in her own flat and she lives by herself.
Oh, God.
Right? Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible place to be. Mm. If anyone ever makes plans or invites her to anything, she'll cancel.
Oh, because she doesn't feel confident to like even be seen?
Doesn't want to be seen. Does not want to be seen. She is someone who loves like dressing up, actually loves socializing, but in her own words, I just wear something that covers me up now. I don't care about if I look good or not. It's just I wear something that covers me up. Her energy is super low. She relies on napping. She has to nap every single day.
Right.
If she doesn't nap, she really struggles to get through the day. She has quite an important job. She works in the pharmaceutical industry.
Right.
And she has to be on the ball for that. And where her energy is so low, her focus is dipping, she's procrastinating. It's now starting to impact her in her career in that sense. And then we have the whole happiness side of things. Mm. And again, I never mention names because I like to keep this quite confidential, but she's really unhappy at the moment.
Yeah.
Really, really unhappy at the moment. Mm. She's kind of just getting through the days. Mm. It's like I wake up in the morning, I do what I need to in my day. It's a grind to just get through it. And then I'm just waiting for the nighttime so I can go to sleep and not have to think. Mm. And that's not a way to be living for anybody.
Mm.
You know, so these are themes that maybe not to the same extent or maybe slightly different for each individual, but these are common themes that we see.
Mm.
And it all stems from how women perceive themselves, how they feel within their own skin.
Mm.
And that's why I say what starts off as something aesthetic always goes deeper, because these things trickle down into so many parts of our lives without us realizing. You might think, okay, I've gained a bit of weight, I don't like really dressing up anymore, but you don't realize, okay, that's stopping you from now going out.
Mm.
That's stopping you from potentially dating and finding someone, getting married, having a kid, if that's your thing.
Mm.
This is something we come across a lot of women who want to actually settle down and have their own families, but they're so scared to even go out and date and find someone.
Mm.
In their careers, when their energy is so low and it's really starting to impact them there, but they're not progressing as they should. They're kind of stuck in a rut at work. They're not going out there seeking new opportunities and things.
Mm.
There's so many different facets to it, but confidence, energy, and happiness, I think, are the reason there are three main pillars. Is they're the ones that are always impacted in, I'd say, pretty much every single woman that I've spoken to anyway.
Interesting. So do you feel like going through this coaching program, have you seen that like drastic change in their confidence? Like, can you give me an example maybe of a client who has gone through the program who's like flourished at the end of it?
Loads. I love it. This is the bit that I love the most. It's when you see someone at the beginning and what they were like.
Mm.
So just to give you a quick bit of a background on how I like to work, we have a thorough vetting process before anyone joins the THR. It's not just like anyone can come into it.
Right.
I want to make sure that this is going to be a good fit for that person. I want to make sure I can genuinely help that person.
Mm.
If I can't, I'm very honest with people and I'll say, this isn't for you.
Mm.
You know, so as long as I am 100% sure I can help this individual, let's do it.
Mm.
Now, the most fulfilling thing for me is when I see someone from that point. So I have long conversations with people before I even take them on.
Mm.
I want to know, I really dig down and say, okay, what's going on here?
Mm.
How is this impacting you? Where do you want to be from here? Where are you trying to take your life? Not just now, where do you want to be in the next 3, 5, 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
How is where you're at right now preventing that from happening? All of these things. How is it impacting your family, your friends, your relationships,
mm-hmm.
everything?
Yeah.
And you uncover so much about people.
Mm.
And when you uncover how much it's impacting them in a negative way, and then you see them down the line and it's like a complete 180, that is amazing to see. So let me try and think of one. So I'll give you an example of a current member of the THR. One of the things when we first spoke was what I've just mentioned. It was dating for her.
Yeah.
She's in her mid-30s, South Asian. So has the family, like, why are you not married?
Oh, God.
Why don't you have some, that whole thing. But more so than that, it's something that she wants herself.
Yeah.
She'd gained a bit of weight. She stopped going out, wasn't feeling comfortable, all of that. And she was like, I really want to put myself out there to date, but I just can't do it.
Mm.
So now she's going on dates. She's actually seeing someone quite regularly now. So I don't even know if she's dating fully anymore, if she's just committed to this one person. But you can see that evolution. And she used to tell me every time she had a date.
Mm.
And I remember the first time she messaged me, like, Dylan, I've got a date tomorrow night. And I was probably more excited than she was. Because I was like, I know how much you want this.
Yeah.
We had a past client. I can mention her name because she won't mind. Her name's Chloe.
Okay.
I speak about her a lot because her transformation was amazing.
Yeah.
So Chloe came to us when she just had a baby a few months prior.
Mm-hmm.
So her daughter wasn't even a year old at that point. And she'd gained a lot of weight after the pregnancy and obviously just looking after the baby, etc. It started impacting her. Her own words were, I do not recognize myself in the mirror anymore.
Wow.
And it was not just physically, it was just, I don't know who this person is anymore.
Mm.
It was impacting her, her partner, her daughter, everything. Chloe did amazingly, amazingly. She completely took on board everything we taught her. She also had a really bad relationship with food previously that had been passed down to her from her own mother.
Right, okay.
She took all the knowledge on board, implemented it, which was super important. Now she's back down in terms of her physique, even better than it was before she was pregnant, in her own words.
Wow.
She feels more confident than she's ever been.
Mm.
Her partner is loving life. she sends me messages, like screenshots that her partner sends her, like he just loves the way that she is now. Oh. She's got more energy with her daughter, who's now a toddler, and she's obviously a lot more, there's got keeping up with toddlers is a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah.
But the fact that she's able to do all of this now, and it was so different to how she came to me.
Mm.
So yeah, for me, it's amazing to see just how we change. Again, it sounds so cliche, but when people turn around and say to me, Dylan, you've changed my life, I think, but you know, when you see it actually happening, it's so fulfilling. There's a feeling that it gives me that I'm like, I want to do this for everyone.
The impact you have is probably bigger than you realize, because it ripples into every aspect of your client's life and the lives of the people that they're interacting with.
Yeah. So
it sounds super fulfilling, and I can see why you're so passionate. Like, your eyes literally lit up when you were talking about your work, and I was like, oh, he's loving it.
I do. I love it.
For anybody who isn't sort of, you know, regularly exercising or eating well, or, you know, is struggling with the way they look, the way they feel, what is one simple step that they could start with?
Just start. I know it sounds silly, but I feel like it's overcomplicated a lot of times.
Yeah.
A part of it is, like we spoke about earlier, there's a lot of information. There's almost too much information out there.
Yeah.
And I feel like people in their minds make it out to be harder than it actually is. They think, I have to go to the gym 6 days a week. I have to make sure I'm eating super, super clean. I need to make sure I'm sleeping 8 hours a night. I need to make sure I'm drinking this much. And I always say, like, start with the really small habits. Even if you're doing nothing, just go and walk. Walking is such an underrated form of exercise, honestly. When Rin was pregnant, throughout her whole pregnancy, I made her walk with me we did an hour walk every single day to the moment she gave birth.
Right.
So even at 9 months pregnant, she was walking for an hour.
Mm.
And it helped her so much throughout her pregnancy, throughout her labor. Not just for pregnant people, but I just mean in general, like, walking is so, I feel like people take it for granted.
Mm.
And I feel like now, especially, most people are in an office job. Most people drive everywhere. We don't walk as much.
Yeah, it's true.
Start off really simple, even if it is a 20-minute walk. 15-minute walk, and build upon that, and slowly build these small habits over time. The biggest problem I see is when people go all in, like, they try, it's all or nothing. It's like, I have to do all of this perfectly, or it's just I'm not doing anything at all. Why are you smiling?
I'm smiling because I am like that. Like, I'll go to the gym, and like, I've had times where I've literally gone to the gym after months or like even years, and I've just literally killed myself trying to do absolutely everything. Full body workout, like 110%. And then I can't move for a week.
Exactly.
And then I don't go back.
Then you don't want to go. No, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I say. Like, you can be great for a short period of time.
Mm.
And then for a majority of it, just not do anything. Or you can be very consistent for a long period of time, and then you see a better result. And I always refer to this with my clients as a skyscraper. I use a skyscraper analogy, and I say, if you're trying to build a skyscraper here, which is what we want for all of you, we want your life to be your skyscraper, and we want that to stand the test of time, it has to have solid foundations.
Mm.
If you build any piece of architecture on shit foundations, it will come crumbling down at some point.
Yeah,
whether it's in a few months or a few years, whenever, it's going to come down. So
start
off really simple. Even when people come to us, we start off really, really simple for most people. It's just nailing those foundational habits, like just getting a bit more active. Doesn't mean you have to go to the gym 5-6 times a week.
Mm.
It might just mean, for depending on your level, if it's someone like you said who's never done any exercise previously, go for a walk.
Mm.
Okay, you don't drink much water. Okay, let's start by even drinking a little bit of water.
Yeah.
Okay, you're staying up late every night and you're waking up tired every morning. Okay. Let's start to maybe go to sleep a little bit earlier, or have some sort of a nighttime routine even before you go to sleep, whatever it might be. So small little things, and then build upon those over time, and they compound massively.
Mm. Where do you see DNA Fitness in 20 years?
I don't know. That's a loaded question, man. That's 20 years is a long time.
I know. That's why I ask it.
I'm going to be 53. That's sad. The NFT, do you know what? I don't know where it will go in that sense. The same way I didn't ever expect it to be what it is today. But the one thing I do want from it is I want it to almost be like a template, in the sense I feel like I'm not knocking anyone here. There's so many coaches out there. There's so many personal trainers out there. There's so many people in the fitness world. There's so many that are terrible, that give bad information. And maybe because they don't know any better themselves. I don't know. But it's not a hugely regulated industry either.
Yeah, that's true.
So I would hope for it to become a bit more regulated. But in terms of DNA Fitness, I would love for it to be a template where it is seen as almost like the gold standard. Where if anyone is doing any form of coaching in this field, we are the blueprint that they follow. And if I can achieve that in 20 years' time, that is a huge success for me.
I love that. Where do you see yourself in that time?
In terms of DNA Fitness or just in my life?
In your life.
I'll be 53. I don't know. Well, I have a daughter now.
You do.
She'll be 20. I just hope that she has the best life that I can give her. I hope that I'm still around for her at that point.
That's
true. 20 years, I don't know. I just want to be happy. I just want to make sure I'm happy. Like, I'm very happy right now with my life.
Yeah.
And I know things can change, and I know life always happens. There's going to be so many obstacles and challenges that are going to come across it in the next 20 years. I just hope ultimately in 20 years' time I can sit here and still say I'm happy and I love my life.
Do you know how many people sit on that couch and tell me the exact same thing? People who've done so many different things and are doing so many different things and have gone through like some, you know, probably very difficult periods where they've worked too much or they've gone through stuff in their lives. And everybody ultimately just wants to be happy, right? So it puts things into perspective. I feel like speaking to you just got me reflecting so much, because you've kind of almost reminded me of like what is important. And, you know, like we don't have a very long life. So, yeah, thanks for doing that for me today.
Of course. I feel like life's so fast as well, right?
So fast. Like literally the last 5 years of my life are a blur. Like I could not tell you what I've done.
And you're so caught up in things you forget about what's actually important.
Absolutely. Super excited for this new chapter of your life. I just hope, you know, everything goes well, and I wish you all the best for
Thank
it.
You.
And my last question to you is, Dylan, what do you have strong game in?
That's a hard question. In anything.
Could be anything.
Seeking the truth. I guess this goes back to when we first started this conversation and I said I question everything. And I also do that with every single person I communicate with. And I think this is what helps me in terms of my coaching, where I will sift through the bullshit. Like, I will get to the truth. People can hide behind their bullshit all they want, but I will get to the truth behind it. And I think I have very strong game in that.
Not seeing through people's bullshit.
Yes. It's a funny thing. I always have this conversation with Rin.
Yeah.
And I always say to her, like, it's really weird. This is going to sound so weird to you. I can take a look at someone. I can see a picture of them. I don't even have to meet them physically. You can show me a picture of someone and I can tell you so much about what that person is like.
Okay.
In terms of just like if they are a bullshitter or if they are genuine or if like just what are they deeply like. I don't know what it is. It's some sort of an intuition. I don't know. And I've never been wrong about anybody.
You know what I'm going to ask you now, right? What's the picture you've built about me? This is the first time we've met, so.
This is. You're cool, man. You're cool. I followed you on Instagram for a while. And you're very genuine.
Thank you.
Very genuine. And I think especially in the field that you're in, like in terms of like what we're doing even here, podcasting, networking, all of that, it's very rare to find genuine people. If I didn't think so, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
That is true. Thank you for saying that. That does mean a lot. I feel like it's just so complicated trying to be anything other than who you are. Like, I feel like my attention span is way too short. My memory is way too bad to be going around lying to people, because I'd get caught out in a second.
Don't have energy for that.
No, man.
Getting old now, man.
Exactly. Exactly. But no, thank you once again so much for all the work that you do for the community. I hope that more people find out about you and the message that you're putting out, and maybe consider, you know, looking at you as a coach. But even if, you know, it's just about trying to learn a bit more about being more healthy and fit, then I hope they do kind of look at you as an example, because I think you are. And despite like all the difficult things you've gone through, you've really kind of turned it around into something that is giving back. So I think that's a really noble thing. And
thank you. Yeah, appreciate super that. Cool.
So, yeah. And I really do hope that DNA Fitness keeps flourishing and doing as well as it is. And hopefully, maybe in a few years' time, I'll interview you again and we'll see where you are.
See where it's gone. Exactly. No, definitely. Definitely.
Awesome. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Brown Game Strong. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to stick around, then please do hit the subscribe button if you're listening on YouTube. And do give the social links a follow as well. We're on Instagram and on TikTok. If you have any thoughts, feedback, advice, any potential guests that you'd like to hear me speak to, then please do drop a note on either the socials or on browngamestrong@gmail.com. Thank you once again for listening, and really appreciate your support.